Good evening and welcome to Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. This is 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. This program is all about music and the people who make it. And tonight's program is what I like to call a legacy show, which means I'm going to shine a spotlight on one of the true giants of the music business. Because July 1st slipped by us and we didn't get a chance to celebrate the music and life of Chicago blues icon Willie Dixon, this evening we're going to rectify that by celebrating what would have been Willie's 103rd birthday. We'll celebrate belatedly with his grandson, Alex Dixon, himself a music-making bluesman, joining us shortly. The late, great Willie Dixon wrote numerous songs that later became radio hits for mainstream rock artists like the Rolling Stones, Foghat, Savoy Brown, Led Zeppelin, Cream, The Doors, Ricky Nelson, Elvis Presley, George Thorogood, Jeff Beck. Well, you get the idea. Pretty much everybody at some point covered a Willie Dixon song. But tonight's show is not going to feature those covers. We're going to feature the original blues format those songs took by playing songs by Dixon's peers, his friends, and Chess record label mates like Little Walter, Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, and others. We'll even hear Willie Dixon himself performing, and I may even slip in a great treatment of a Dixon classic done by Alex's own band. But you know what? It's time to get into the show. Willie Dixon's 103rd birthday may have slipped by us quietly just a few days ago, but it's safe to say that tonight we'll celebrate by pitching a wang dang doodle.
We gon' pitch a bump down to that Union Hall.
cool all night long. And we're pitching it for Willie Dixon because he just would have been 103 years old on July 1st. And somehow his birthday snuck past us with all the 4th of July hoopla. But I would be remiss not to do a legacy show and pay respects to one of the greatest bluesmen, one of the greatest songwriters that has provided us all with a soundtrack to our lives. Songs that he wrote have been covered, as I mentioned in the opening, by the Rolling Stones, Foghat, Savoy Brown, Led Zeppelin, Cream, The Doors, Ricky Nelson, Elvis Presley, George Thorogood, Jeff Beck, the great lady herself right there, the Queen of the Blues, Coco Taylor, and so many others. We would be here for the hour if we were just reciting the groups and the artists that have covered his music. The legacy continues of Willie Dixon. I had the opportunity to work with him a couple of times, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. But first, I'd like to introduce my audience to the legacy himself, Mr. Alex Dixon, grandson of Willie. Hello, Alex.
How you doing?
Hello, I'm glad you could join us today and be part of the show. And as we remember your grandfather, and you were, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were literally raised by your grandparents, is that correct?
Yeah, I was raised by my grandparents in Chicago and in California. I lived with them my whole life.
That had to be quite an interesting life. I've talked to Mojo Morganfield, Muddy's youngest son, and he would tell stories about, you know, being there and suddenly there's a knock on the door and Eric Clapton's at the door, you know, and all these different celebrities that paid homage to your grandfather and to Muddy and to Little Walter and to Howlin' Wolf and all these great Chicago chess artists that inspired so many of the British artists in particular. And then they brought it back home to us. What was it like growing up in the Willie Dixon household?
Well, it was wonderful. You know, we all had to play music. When we moved from Chicago to California, we had a piano in the house. I was practicing 2 hours a day, pretty much. You know, we were practicing, working out songs quite often for different projects, for either movie projects or upcoming albums. It was, you know, fun. I had an uncle that was older than me playing piano in the Chicago Blues All-Stars, and he was playing, and then when he started playing with the band, I started playing with him in California, and I got kind of the world part of the tour. When we were doing in California, we were doing movies and a lot of the exposure, so I got to have a lot of fun touring with my grandfather on stage, and, you know, we did a lot of the blues in school programs for the foundation. It was a blast. You know, now that I look back on it, you know, sometimes I was nervous playing on stage at 12, 13 years old, but, you know, it was cool. Been on MTV and VH1 and all that stuff back then.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
And you look back at it now and say, I didn't even realize I was in the middle of the eye of the hurricane right then.
Not really. You know, I remember when I was younger and I was around 13, 14 years old, and he talked to me and he says, you know, I'm going to do this last album. You know, you want to help me get the songs together and write some songs. And so we're writing some songs. So we had all these, you know, Grammy nominations, but never a Grammy. And we got together and wrote some songs. And we had the help of an artist named Cash McCall, who helped produce a lot of the album and Hidden Charms. And he won his Grammy. And we were just, you know, ecstatic that he started getting some of his accolades as he got older.
Mm-hmm. It's nice that he was able to live to see them. So many of the great artists don't get appreciated until after they've passed, and they don't realize the impact they've had.
Yeah, we had a lot of family meetings every Sunday about our business and what we're going to do. And, you know, we would talk about some of the things that happened to him from different bands, from the Big Three Trio to his chess days, and he would talk about him going over to London and how he was trying to pitch songs for, you know, some of the rock bands, and they came over here and they recorded his music, and he was ecstatic about it. And he would tell us, you know, unfortunately, he would say, a lot of my musical start to get really big after I passed away. And we're like, wow, I mean, you think so? And he's like, yeah, I think when I'm gone, it's going to be bigger, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we would talk about this a lot every Sunday at our meetings. And, you know, he just was a very positive person when it came down to his music. And he, you know, he was just happy to play his, you know, music and help other artists out if he could. And, you know, it was just a very great upbringing, I would say.
I remember, as I mentioned, I got a chance to meet him and briefly work with him in the early 1980s. He played at a club I worked at. I used to book a club called Point East, and we had Muddy Waters there a few times. And the last time Muddy was booked, he took ill. It was shortly before he passed, and Willie Dixon Trio filled in for him. And that was my first meeting with Willie. And the thing I remember, aside from the music and everything, the one thing that I really remember is when he shook my hand disappeared in his palm. He had the biggest hands, I think, of anyone I've ever met.
Yeah, he had pretty big hands. I mean, we're all kind of big people. You know, I'm a little bit shorter than him. I'm probably his size. I know when I was playing the Cava Blues Fest, I was wearing his jacket. So I was like, okay, I can fit his jacket. But we all, you know, have similar features. But he had huge fingers and hands from playing the upright bass quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could understand why he was so good at playing the bass after I shook his hand. I was like, wow.
There's things that on that bass that I'm still trying to figure out that he did, you know, 30 years ago. And I'm like very close, but I'm, you know, just not quite there.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, you were talking about that last the album that you worked with him on, and you guys were nominated for a Grammy. I don't think you got the Grammy, is that correct?
We actually won that Grammy.
You did win.
1989, yeah, Best of Blues Traditional Album.
Okay.
Yeah, Hidden Charms. We won that Grammy. That was the only one he actually won. So.
And of course, he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and some other Hall of Fames we're going to talk about. But why don't we play that song? You co-wrote this with him, as I understand, correct? I'm talking about "Study War No More."
Yeah, we co-wrote that song together. Yeah.
Is there a story that we can tell before we play it?
Well, you know, we were coming up with the idea of he was all about peace and love, and he was always trying to, you know, he didn't like a lot of wars. I think around that time we just had some issues overseas, and he wanted to write a song about, you know, if we would just study about peace and happiness and maybe, like, you know, helping other people. And he would say, well, we're studying war, you know, we're making money off war. He didn't like that. It was kind of a, you know, one of his peace songs. And we're writing together. I was coming up with the arrangements, and we're just writing the lyrics out, and we put it on the album.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 13 when we did that.
Wow.
So it was pretty pretty awesome. We had that. And then we had also the producer T-Bone Burnett was on the album, and we kind of made it a nice folky arrangement. So we did that. And we had a lot of fun doing that because I got to go. And I don't know if you've been in California before, but there's like used to Tower Records on Sunset Boulevard. And we got to do the album release there. And it was a great, you know, great time. We had a lot of fun on that album.
Well, let's play this song now that we're talking about, co-written with a 13-year-old Alex. This is the man himself, Willie Dixon, with Alex and "Study War No More." More with Alex Dixon. We return.
Of all of those rockets too. On the dirty, dirty. I treat you. No more calling information. Everybody get education. Every time a baby's born, we know he'll have him a happy home. We're gonna steady, steady one no more. We're gonna think, think of one no more.
What a great song.
Wow. I've heard that song in a long time in its entirety. Yeah, wow.
Go back 1989 on that one, Hidden Charms. 13-year-old Alex co-writing with his grandfather there, the legendary Willie Dixon. Willie would have been 103 years old this month, July 1st, celebrating his birthday belatedly, but celebrating it nonetheless. We opened up with Wang Dang Doodle, which is a favorite of mine, probably my favorite Willie Dixon song, done by Coco Taylor, who does the best version of it of all. I've got to wonder, Alex, of all the different artists, and I recited a litany of all these famous folks that have recorded Willie's music, do you have personal favorites? I mean, I know you love the blues, and I know you guys are a blues family, but did you enjoy and did Willie enjoy the rock takes on his songs, like Foghat and the Stones and people like that?
Oh, of course he enjoyed, all the rock bands, even Led Zeppelin. I mean, people always will talk to us, and I know, Jason Bonham, Don Bonham's son, pretty well, and they would always ask us if there was any animosity between the Zeppelin family, and we're like, no, it was just like, some misunderstandings, we got everything straight, but he thought it was awesome when they did bring it on home and shook me, and, figured out the whole you need love, whole lot of love situation, and we straightened everything out, but, I mean, he enjoyed the Rolling Stones, Foghat. He loved the Fleetwood Mac when they did something with some of the songs, and he liked Tom Petty, and he enjoyed the fact that they were doing those songs that him and Muddy Waters were trying to get out of Chicago, get famous in Chicago, and that's kind of a reason why he went over to England anyway, because he wanted to get exposure for the blues, right. And he knew that being over there would help him. He had no clue that he would have some kind of influence with the British invasion, but when it happened, he was, totally excited about it.
Yeah, the Stones back in 64, of course, they weren't writing a lot yet. They were covering a lot of the blues stuff, but Little Red Rooster, they did I Just Want to Make Love to You before Foghat ever did. Just some great stuff, and they kept it pretty traditional. I mean, they gave it a blues twist, just like it was written. And You yourself are a musician, and I've got a version of your Spoonful that I've been playing for the last several years on the radio. Actually, the only song I have by you, I would like to get more.
Okay. But, I'll get some more stuff out there for you.
Okay. Yeah. But let's talk a little about your career, and obviously you've got big shoes to step into, being Willie's grandson, and I know that on Spoonful you certainly live up to the task. How long have you been recording, and what's going on in your career at this point?
Well, as of right now, I've been mostly on the writing side of the business, and I do handle a lot of the business side of our company, Hoochie Coochie Music. It's a publishing company with all the songs in there. And I do have an aunt that runs it also. And for me personally, I write a lot of songs. I do play occasionally in Chicago, but as of right now, I'm always writing songs for other artists. We have a studio that we're building right now in 2120's studios in Chicago, the Old Chess Building.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be hearing a lot of music coming out from me in the next 2 years because, I have piles and piles of songs, and, we have to do some other projects with, other local blues artists in Chicago. Some of the bigger name ones, I get in contact by Mud Morganfield. He's always talking to me about writing some songs together. I talked to Joseph. So I'm kind of like, I got a lot of different things going on, and I'm trying to pick and choose what I'm going to be doing first. But as of right now, I'm just mostly in the songwriter portion, and I write songs for other artists. So.
I think that's just magical that that Muddy's sons, Willie's grandson, you guys are all getting together and doing stuff again. It's like the second coming. And I work a lot with Joseph Mojo. I've not had a chance to work with Big Bill or Mud, but I've heard their music, and I just think it's amazing the legacy that all of you are carrying on. You guys are blues ambassadors to the world. I mean, your folks and your grandparents, they all embraced the Chicago blues sound. They invented the Chicago blues sound, and you guys are just carrying it to the world as they did. And I just think that is incredible that all these years later, it's still alive and well.
Yeah, I talked to Mud, and I talked to Joseph on the phone quite a bit, and I was just telling Joseph maybe a month or so that, I was like in the front row at his dad's funeral, unfortunately, when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know who this person was, but I was like, why are there so many cameras out here? I was with my grandfather, and he had to go to the funeral, and I just realized, oh my God, that's my grandfather's friend, and he must have been somebody big.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, being a young kid, and we're in this limousine, and we're going to, and I'm like, wondering why people are taking pictures of us, and we're walking in there. And then I saw this, as we got home, I saw this whole thing in the news, and I was looking at it, because to me it was just, my grandfather, he plays music. We're on the south side of Chicago, and then I realized who Muddy Waters really was, and I'm like, okay, now it's starting to make sense. And that guy that I saw that was, really fair-skinned, that was his Johnny Winters, right? Now I'm seeing what's going on. I'm starting to see these guys in the house, and I'm realizing, okay, these are all these blues guys, and they're coming by the house and talking to us. So I've always told the Muddy Waters family that anything I can help them with, I'll always help them. I played with Mud on stage quite a bit out in California and in Chicago. I've never played with Joseph, but I see he's making a name for himself, looking to go.
Yeah, he is.
He looks like his dad. He looks like his dad, so let's see. We can always get a nice song for him to sing. I mean, I'm sure he has a lot of ideas, and the last time I actually talked to him, I asked him what practicing his guitar, so we'll see.
I just did a show with him. I produce festivals out here, and we just had him for the closing show last. It was the 4th of July, actually. And he came on stage. His band warmed up, did a couple of tunes, and he comes up, and he starts singing Blow, Wind, Blow. Got halfway through it, and guess what happened? The wind blew, the rain came, show was over. It was, and he goes, maybe next time I should do a Sunshine song. So, yeah, maybe we should. But great stuff. I had a chance. You mentioned the Legendary Chess Studios, and I had a chance the second time to meet Willie when he was like the Goodwill Ambassador at Jerem Studios. And Jerem didn't seem to last too long. It was kind of a takeoff of the chess records in the original building. And I remember going there and taking pictures of the chess pieces embedded in the wall. I was a young reporter at the time. And I remember him greeting us at the door. And again, that big handshake, that warm smile. He was just the kindest big teddy bear of a guy. And was he always like that? Was that the Willie Dixon that you saw behind the scenes too?
Yeah, he was pretty positive. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I got in trouble quite a bit if I didn't practice my piano. So. But I mean, for the most part, he was pretty, we would watch a lot of boxing because he was a boxer. So we would watch boxing, eat a bunch of ice cream, talk about what we're going to be doing next. We really had a positive good time together. And it's, you know, I'm a grandkid, but I spent probably as much time with him as any of his kids. So it's always interesting how people always say, "You look just like him," and I'm like, "Well, you know, I mean, maybe that's because you're maybe because he raised me." But we spend a lot of time together from from a baby up to I was 18 when he passed away. So We spent quite a bit of time together. But I thought he was a pretty positive, relaxed person, and he was very serious about his music. You know, he wanted to. For instance, if we were doing a song, time didn't really mean anything. So if we started at 6 o'clock in the afternoon and you can get it right, we might be up to 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So it's kind of interesting because, you know, I know a lot of musicians, they do a lot of the jam and they do a lot of, like, you know, they do things on the fly a lot. But with us, with him, I mean, he pretty much rehearsed us to death for a song.
Wow.
So by the time we got on the stage, it was like, we played this song a million times, so we're fine. So that's pretty much what it was. So he was a very focused, driven person, but he didn't have any, like I said, he had a really positive attitude about things.
I can't believe how many people have recorded his songs, his music. It's mind-boggling when you think of all the people, of all the different styles, all the different genres, all the different backgrounds that have given their own twist of his music. And probably my favorite, as I mentioned, was Coco Taylor, Wang Dang Doodle. I think she did a great job. I love Savoy Brown's version. I love the rock stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it was the early Chess stuff that really set the bar, the Little Walters, the Howlin' Wolves, the Muddy Waters. And since we were just talking about Muddy and his family, let's play a Muddy take on one of Willie's songs. And if I'm not mistaken, he was also Muddy's producer on those early tracks, correct?
He helped produce a lot of his early tracks, yes. They did.
Let's play "I'm Your Hoochie Coochie Man." This is the late great Muddy Waters as we celebrate the birthday of Willie Dixon. More with Alex Dixon on the other side.
The gypsy woman told my mother before I was born, "You got a boy child coming. He gonna be a son of a gun. He gonna make pretty women jump and shout. Then the world wanna know what this all about. But you know I'm here. Everybody knows I'm here. I got a black cat bone, I got a mojo too, I got a John the Conqueror, I got to mess with you. I'm gonna make you girls lead me by my hand, then the world will know I'm a hoochie coochie man. But you know I'm here. On the 7 hours, on the 7 days, on the 7 month, the 7 doctors say he was born for good luck, and that you see, I got $700. Don't you mess with me, but you know.
Knows Hoochie Coochie Man, Willie Dixon music done by late great Muddy Waters. And is it any wonder why Willie Dixon was inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame during the inaugural session of the ceremony? He's also a pioneer in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Sadly, posthumously, it was just a couple years after he passed that he made it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But that's quite an accomplishment as well. Our guest is Alex Dixon, who was born here in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, correct? And it was back in the mid-70s?
Yes. That's me, 75.
Wow, raised by, I was just getting out of high school then. You're a young man.
I'm getting up there. Getting up there, 43.
I got to ask you, what do you think, or what did you think of Cadillac Records, the movie?
You know, it's funny. I was listening to this song, and I remember when they were, you know, sending us the script of Cadillac Records to my grandmother, and we're all looking at it, and we had to change some things because, you know, some things were not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to, you know, tell Sony about how the song "Hoochie Coochie Man" was actually proposed to Muddy Waters. It was proposed to him inside of a club backstage, and he actually learned the song backstage and then sang it in front of the crowd. It was way before they got to the studio, and I was trying to explain to him that he had the paperwork, and he was, you know, teaching Muddy the riff and the lyrics, and Muddy caught onto the song immediately, sang it at the club. It was, everybody liked it, and that's how it got recorded. And
wow,
they didn't think it was so they used another scene about that. But we thought Cadillac Records was good. I mean, it's like a was anything that's positive light about the blues, for the most part, we're happy about. And we're happy to see that. I wish they would have probably had Bill Chess involved, I guess, the brother.
Right.
I think he was just as important as Leonard. And you know, I wish they would have put some of the other guys in there, like Bo Diddley. I think that would have been awesome to have him in Cadillac Records, because he was, you know, pretty big at Chess during some of that time. But I know they were trying to get some of the main characters. And, you know, Little Walter, I mean, I think Little Walter got a whole other fame about him after the Cadillac Records, because I know people who are young, like me or younger, and they know who Little Walter is because of that movie. So
I thought
he had a great.
Go ahead.
No, he had a great. I mean, it was a great, you know, part for him. So I thought it was a good movie for the blues.
I thought everyone in that film really portrayed their characters quite well, and I thought the story was told well. Of course, you know, you're an insider, and you had your grandmother Marie there to correct everything. And that's something that I had a lot of respect for her. And after Willie passed, she was very defensive, very proactive in keeping his legacy alive, keeping his legacy accurate, making sure that he was respected after death as much as he was during his life. And I thought that was she was a great woman.
Yeah, I mean, I would talk to her quite a bit. And of course, I would see her all the time. And I would tell her, like, you know, one of her main legacies that people don't know about is that she's the primary reason why we actually still own our songs and our publishing. And, you know, she was able to go in the courtrooms and, you know, battle with our ex-manager and make sure that we actually own our songs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't have that ability. And she was, you know, very... I wouldn't call her stubborn, but she was very stern about making sure that we're gonna own our songs and our you know, some of our masters. And you know, she did a great job of keeping her legacy going. And now, of course, she passed about a year and a half ago, and now it's up to Jackie and me and the rest of the family to keep it going. So we have quite a bit of plans that we're gonna be doing in the next year or so, and we've been just getting things developed, and I'm making my calls to my friends and telling them, like, we're about to go full drive with everything now. So I'm kind of excited about the time we're in right now.
Okay. Now, was she and was Willie, were they excited when you said, this is what I want to do? I want to be like you. I want to write songs. I want to be a performer. I want to produce. Or did they give you the, you know, get a real job, son. Don't go through the hardship we did. What was their take on it?
Well, he was more of, that's, you know, that's what he wanted me to do, play music a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did, you know, go to college in Cal State LA, and I had a career, actually. people don't know this, but I used to be a police officer for 10 years. So I did that, and then I had some deaths in the family, and I wound up leaving my job in law enforcement to help back with the foundation back in 2010. So I was I had, you know, a regular career, but, you know, once you play music, it's hard to get it out of your system, I guess. And,
right.
You know, which is a job you have, that, you know, it's good to have a steady paycheck, but you're always playing music. Now, actually, my grandmother one time booked me for the Chicago Blues Fest while I was working, you know, in L.A., and I'm like, I can't just leave and tell them that I'm a musician. They don't understand that.
Oh,
so, I was fortunate enough to go to, you know, great schools, and I got my education, and she, my grandmother was always nervous about me playing music because of some of the influences, and some people, you know, I don't drink or do any drugs or anything, but, you know, she saw that, I saw that a lot when I was playing younger, and I was too, of course, scared to even touch anything because my grandfather didn't drink or do anything, so he was like, he couldn't touch anything, so. And she was scared about what happened to him as a artist, how, you know, like you mentioned, the Rolling Stones were recording our songs, yet we were on the outside of Chicago with no money.
Right.
So my grandfather, we were like, well, how's this rock band from England recording our music and we don't have any checks, you know, and so, or don't have any money. So she was always worried that the music business was, you know, very, you know, tough. So she was kind of, make sure you understand what's going on in this industry, which is the reason why I started learning more about the business side, and I had to go do some internship at the then, it was called Bug Music, which is our administrative company. Now it's called BMG, but I was down there quite a bit learning about all the licensing and how we actually get paid. So now I know the ins and outs of the music business, and now you know, I'm pretty secure about how to make money in this industry, but which is really songwriting. I always tell my friends, we can write some songs together, you know, but I would say write some songs because you can't tour forever.
Right, right. Yeah, you own the songs. You know, you've got a career forever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a grandkid, so, I mean, we benefit from songs that my grandfather wrote 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I always tell them, like, hey, your kid's going to see something, benefit from a song that you wrote, you know, a long time ago. And, you know, one of his most famous songs, You Need Love, wasn't even released in America. But since Led Zeppelin did a whole lot of love, it wound up being a hit song. And it's the same song. And I would, you know, tell my friends and, hey, my kid, who was his great-grandkid, is, you know, benefiting from a song he wrote 60 years ago. So write some songs, guys, and make sure you own them, or, you know, co-writer sign, and, you know, just make sure you can write some songs because you can't tour forever. So
exactly. Well, you just mentioned You Need Love and Whole Lot of Love, and again, I don't want to dwell on the whole Led Zeppelin thing because that's been rehashed and hashed over, and you guys have all gotten on the other side of that. But one of the things, I just wanted to make sure that my stories are straight on this. I'd always heard that Willie took the money from the lawsuit, and that's how he founded Blues Heaven Foundation. Is that correct?
No, it's not correct.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay.
That was actually what happened was my grandfather had the foundation when I was a kid, before Led Zeppelin, before we even kind of knew about the whole Led Zeppelin case. It's actually a weird story because since I told you that You Need Love never got released, and so we never heard the song, people in the family, except for one of my aunts. Her name was Shirley Dixon, and she used to run the foundation, and we're like literally in the house in Glendale, California. We had a house there, and she brings the record, and she's playing, you know, a Whole Lot of Love. And we're all sitting there like, what? I've never heard this song before. And then my grandfather says, hey, that's my song. And that's how the lawsuit started. This is like 1984. So we had no clue because they did the songwriters credits for whole Bring It On Home, I Can't Quit You Baby, and any other song they, but not a Whole Lot of Love. And we never heard the song before. I mean, but she knew it. And she brought it to my grandfather, and that's how the lawsuit started. But Blues Heaven was already established before because I was already doing you know, blues in school, and we were doing, like, you know, giving out books to schools and doing, you know, assemblies for elementary schools. So Blues Heavens actually started, my grandmother went and bought the building in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So after my grandfather passed away. But Blues Heaven was already started, and we decided to move it to that building in the 90s. Led Zeppelin, we was out of, you know, we had to settle out of court, but there's nothing connecting Blues Heaven and Blues Heaven and the Led Zeppelin case, because, you know, it was other songs that people didn't get paid for a long time ago in the Chess days.
Right.
And so he was actually starting Blues Heaven because he wanted to have something to help artists, you know, when you get your songs taken from you, because that was happening to him quite a bit, and he had no resources or anybody to help him get his songs back from the Chess family at the time.
Blues Heaven is on Facebook for the listeners. It's just bluesheaven.com is the website. You can also find it on Facebook. And the foundation does a lot of different things. You mentioned it helps blues artists that need help, whether it's through illness, through legal means, things like that. What else does Blues Heaven do?
Well, right now we're doing the Blues in School. Not Blues in School, sorry. We're doing the Blues Garden. And we do Blues in School also. We did some benefits before where we'll go out and teach people different styles of the blues. Right now we have the garden show next to the building. Mm-hmm. We do shows every Thursday. And then we also, we have the museum there. We have the gift shop there. You know, we give out a scholarship. And we also are about to make it a little bit more economical for some artists to record music at the building. We're going to have a more of a high-end version of some of the guys who want to record at Chess Records, and then we're going to have some of the local guys or people who want to get some of their albums out. We're going to have some really, you know, engineering, maybe some free engineering time for the guys to record some of the music, and we have a lot of exhibits down there. I mean, I know that unfortunately if blues artists pass away, they can call down there, give a little bit of a fund to help for the burial and some of the expenses.
Mm-hmm.
We just had a benefit for an artist, Cash McCall. He worked on the album with us with Hits and Charms, we had to help him with some things, and so he's, you know, we help artists who reach out to us, and we try to help them get back on their feet. So
we've been losing so many. We just did a memorial show last week on the Chief. I remember booking him. He was on my show a year ago, and he was working on a new album, and he was so full of life, and then he's gone. And it just seems like so many of the old bluesmen are now, you know, shuffling off the mortal coil, so to speak. And I just, I'm glad
it's
to see.
Sad.
It is, but I'm so glad to see that you and you know, Muddy's kids and others along the way, we're seeing some young blues artists embracing the music again. For a while, it got scary. It seemed like younger people weren't migrating to it, I guess. It was almost like, oh, that's the old people's music. We're not going to embrace that. Especially, young black artists. It seemed like we were getting the Johnny Langs, and we were getting, you know, the Joe Bonamassas that were picking up the slack, but it wasn't the black artists, and it was their heritage. And I'm glad to see so many young talents coming up through the ranks. Lonnie Brooks' sons, Ronnie Baker Brooks, Wayne Baker Brooks, they're all coming into their own now too. And it's a resurgence, and it's very refreshing for someone that saw it the first time around to see it coming back.
I was explaining to some of the guys that I talked to, because, you know, me and my grandfather would talk about his experiences as a blues man in Chicago when he was probably my age, and they would tell him, like, you know, all the greatest blues men are already passed away, and they're talking about, you know, Robert Johnson and Charlie Patton.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, there's no more blues guys left. And this is when they still had, like, Holland Wolf and Muddy Waters around, and they were saying all the blues guys are gone, and they were still there. So I know that, you know, and I remember him talking to me about that. He was perplexed when he would hear that from overseas, or, you know, they had like a newspaper article about all the best blues players are dead, and it was mentioning all the old blues players in the, you know, 20s and 30s. and they were still there in the 60s trying to make a name for themselves.
Right.
In the 50s. So it's kind of similar to what's happening now. A lot of the older blues guys, unfortunately, are passing. But, you know, I think that we're going to have a resurgence. And, you know, we have a lot of, some of the guys are still around. And, you know, I always pick the brains of, you know, the Robert Cray and the Kep Mo. And I talk to these guys and I'm asking them, like, what do you think about this and that? And they're very blunt to me when I talk to them about how we can get things going. And if I send some music to them that doesn't sound right, they don't like it, they'll tell me straight out. So that's what I like.
Yeah, I just ran into an old friend, Benny Turner, Freddie King's younger brother, recently in New Orleans. I was there a couple weeks ago, and he was there promoting his new album and on NOLA Records. And we were talking about that, too. And he's like, you know, me, Buddy, there's a few of us left. But he said, you know, it's the young kids that are coming up. And I guess that would include you. I mean, young kids to them are 40s. So he's like, you know, it's nice to see that that the blues has a future. And I thought that was nice to hear from, the elder statesman that we have today.
Yeah, I just met him about 3 weeks ago. I was actually in New Orleans about 2 weeks ago, so I guess I missed you.
Yeah,
it was hot down there.
Yeah, it was very hot down there. We were down there for the seminar down there in the conference for the ALA, and Michelle Obama was there. And
I heard about that.
Yeah, we were there for that. We saw her speaking engagement, and Trombone Shorty was there, and we were just kind of hanging out, soaking up the flavor of the city. It was my first time as an adult being in New Orleans, and I really enjoyed it. But I'm off track here. I do want to play your version of Spoonful. We're getting ready to wrap up the show here, and I don't want to be remiss and not let the listeners hear what you've done with your grandfather's music. This is a few years old. Like I said, I've been playing this probably since 2010, maybe.
Yeah, it came out in 2009, so time for some new material.
Definitely. Well, I will definitely be in touch with you off-air about getting some of your stuff so we can play it. But is there a reason or a story behind your take on Spoonful? It's definitely got its own twist.
Yeah, we were doing a rock-ish kind of a cream, you know, inspired blues album. We were doing like a rock album kind of when I put this album out. And that actually, that song Spoonful was supposed to be for a song, a movie called, actually it was a TV show called Entourage on HBO.
I've heard of that, yeah.
They were looking for a Spoonful, and they were going to either use the Harlem Wolf version or they wanted to do the rock. My version of a Spoonful, a rock version. So I made it up in the studio, and then they wanted using both. They wanted using the Spoonful in the Entourage show, and they used the Hollywood version also. So I just, you know, went to the studio and made up a nice rock version. I had one of my friends singing of it, and people liked it a lot. And I had a guitar player. His name was B.B. Chungking. We called him. His name was Alan, but he was an Asian guy. He was a guitar player, amazing guitar player. Yeah, unfortunately, he passed away, but he was one of the best guitar players I've ever played with. And he was really awesome. So he's the guitar player on there. And we had James Gaston playing drums. It was awesome. I had fun with that.
All right. Well, we're going to play this. And I just want to say thank you again, Alex, for joining us and giving us so much of your time this evening.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the kind words about my grandfather, too.
He was a good man, and so are you.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care, and we're going to play this. This is our guest this evening, Alex Alex Dixon and the Alex Dixon Band. This is the song we were just talking about from Entourage. It is his grandfather's song, but he's made it his own, Spoonful, on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Your precious love, yeah. from another man. Hey, and lies about that spoon full. Some of them cries about a little spoon full. Some of them doubts about a little spoon full. Everybody fight them by a spoon full.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Trump is in Brussels.